America was born from secession. Like, it's our history, literally. And like, it's un-American to stay in a bad deal. And we're all getting a bad deal from the feds. And so I think we're in a mass transitionary period, but people can guard against whatever is happening to themselves by freeing up your own attention span, maybe putting down the devices, putting down the vitriol, and going, hey, how am I living my life? What you realize is the cartels, the bad drug cartels, and the government are actually colluding through prohibition to make it more dangerous, to make it higher risk, and to make it dark. So if you're going to tell me, oh, we should have more freedom and more personal responsibility, I want to see the more personal responsibility before I want to see the more freedom, because you're not persuading me that this is the right path. We have to lead by example, and we have to be better than everyone else. It's that drama of, oh, we'll just pull your ponytail, you know? And I'm like, you're going to stop pulling my ponytail now, if you don't mind, right?
Today, we are joined by Carla Garrick. You've seen this liberty-loving lady on CNN, Fox News, GQ, The New Yorker, The Economist, and the BBC. Just last year, she was featured on The Dr. Phil Show to discuss why New Hampshire should secede from the United States. Carla moved to New Hampshire in 2008. Ever since, she has been calling for 20,000 libertarians to relocate to the state to change it into a consent-based, voluntary society based on freedom and personal responsibility. She served as president of the Free State Project and organized Porkfest multiple times. She's also an author, a lawyer, a real estate agent, and the host of a cable access news show called Manch Talk. Stay tuned to hear Carla's unique take on everything from Ross Ulbricht and Bitcoin to secession and the Libertarian Party. The first thing I want to ask you about is probably what you get asked about a lot, is national divorce, because I've seen your clip when you were on Dr. Phil. And I just spoke to a guy last week who is in charge of CalExit, who's trying to leave California from the union. Kind of the same reasons, but then I'm sure once y'all secede, it'll go in different directions because they're very left. You're very libertarian. Would you maybe tell the audience, like, make the case for why New Hampshire should secede, why it's a good deal?
Oh, so let me tell you a little bit about NHExit now. This is basically a secessionist movement, a peaceful secessionist movement here in New Hampshire. And my role has sort of developed over the years. When I moved to New Hampshire back in 2008, I moved as part of the Free State Project, which is a movement to concentrate libertarians in the state of New Hampshire. So I was like a Ron Paulian girl back in the day. I think I was the sole Republican in Chinatown where I was living in Manhattan before I moved, and came out in 2008 for all the reasons that one should love New Hampshire, which is it would make a fabulous little country. So I'll get to that when we talk about secession. But, you know, it has cities, it has rural, it has a tiny little coastline, it has the mountains, it has the flatlands, as they call them, from the mountains. And it's a fairly small state, about 1.3 million people. And the state's motto is live free or die. So I feel like there's still that ethos here of independence, personal responsibility, limited government, all those good things. So for many years, I served both on the board and as executive and as president of the Free State Project, did a lot of their events, helped them grow, actually triggered the move, and can explain what that is in a second too. But over the time, I just realized that I don't think we can reform the federal government anymore. I mean, I'm eager and a bit trepidatious to see what they're going to try and do here with Elon and Trump, who I saw, by the way, I don't know, maybe everyone else has seen this, but it was the first time I saw it. I saw a tweet go by, a post on X from Steven Pinker, who is a, you know, thought leader who I actually do respect. And he called them Trusk. So like Trump and Musk into one word, the Trusk administration. And I was like, oh, that one's probably going to stick. So, you know, sure, it's exciting to sort of see people with an appetite to cut the scope of the federal government. But I'm a realist, and I think that we're going to need a more radical, I guess, game plan, because maybe we cut a little bit now, but the problems are so baked into the system that I think we need some alternatives. And so to me, creating my own little country seems like a great alternative.
So like you moved out to New Hampshire because you, what's there? I don't mean to be like that, but I think of New Hampshire. I drove through there one time and I'm like, there's nothing here to do. What is it, just because people want to have their own government and kind of a little country that inspires people to move with the Free State Project? Because when I think about it, I'm like, that would be nice, but I'll be stuck in the wilderness.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, not New York City. It's definitely not Shanghai. It's not Hong Kong. Although, you know, I could make a case for what appealed to about Hong Kong economically back in the day. You know, their first British governor reigned with or ruled with benign neglect, right? And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like good governance to me personally. But New Hampshire, again, it kind of has all those flavors. The biggest city, Manchester, where I live, only has about 120,000 people. So it's not really a big city, but it is the biggest here. Okay. People don't always know, but like we're only an hour from Boston, and Manchester is like 2 hours from Portland, Maine. So, you know, if you want a more cosmopolitan experience, or even Montreal in Canada is like 3-4 hours, you can go get those things. But you're right, it doesn't like fully exist here. And that candidly was an adjustment for me when I moved from New York City. I was like, what? I can't get like takeout, Malaysian takeout at 2 a.m. anymore. I was like, damn it, I'm going to have to learn how to make Thai green curry. And I did.
Okay. So you just get adjusted to it, I guess. You just kind of...
Yeah. And so, I mean, for us, mostly with the people who are moving, right? So this concentration strategy, a big part of that is community. So when the founder who originally came up with the concept, his name is Jason Sorens, and he was a graduate student at Yale. And this was back in like 2001. He wrote an essay that basically posited, what would happen if all the libertarians sort of concentrated in one place so that they could work together to kind of create the environment that they want, right? Like, you know, if you want a big government environment, there are places you can move. Go to Seattle, go to San Francisco, go to New York City, right? But there's really no homeland for us. And so the idea was, well, we'll create this homeland. And the initial plan was, I kind of call it like a mutual assurance contract, where the concept was, okay, if 20,000 people all sign this pledge to move to New Hampshire, then if we get 20,000, then everyone will move. They'll have like 5 years to move. So that, when I said earlier, trigger the move, that triggering of the move happened under my leadership in 2016. And we actually had like Edward Snowden as our keynote speaker out of Russia at the time. So there was this big push, you know, this was post 9/11, when a lot of people were seeing those first steps of tyranny starting, you know, so many things that we regard as normal now, like getting gate-raped by the TSA in order to get on an airplane, is, you know, it's not actually normal. And we should be saying no to all of this. And so the concentration strategy creates the community, which means we start building more like-minded people and networks. So by way of example, there's a massive homeschooling and unschooling community here. It's so big that you'll probably find this comical, because it is sort of the nature of libertarians. Like, I'm starting to see infighting between the voucher people and the we should have no education people, right? And so you're like, someone said to me the other day, because we have a very strong education voucher program here that started what we then saw spread across the rest of the states. And honestly, that is also a value proposition of what we're doing in the Free State, because it has become this laboratory for experimenting, right? So we've been able to pass laws here or sort of go, hey, how would this work, right? And then you sort of see how they tinker with things, you know. So when they introduced education freedom accounts here, initially there was no income limit. And then, you know, the counter as they were negotiating, they were like, oh, okay, $5,000 follows the child, but not if you make X amount of the federal, you know, so they were punishing wealthy people. We're all paying taxes, right? So over time, over 10 years, we're now at the stage where they're going to get rid of that wealth income cap. So it's very incremental, but it is a way to also put in bills, kind of see what the appetite is, and then experiment and then figure it out. And then sometimes it gets taken to other states. So with the secession stuff, we've actually introduced bills. We introduced a constitutional amendment to have New Hampshire peaceably secede from the federal government. Now, I'm the first one to say, out of a house of 400 people, which is one of the New Hampshire advantages, we have this massive House of Representatives here, which, you know, so 400 reps, the Senate's 24, and then we have a governor, and those three bodies are actually currently Republican. So even though the federal delegation is all Democrats, and people often ask, I'm like, yeah, but those are the crooks in DC. Your local government is what really matters, and that is Republican and soft, small L libertarian. And of the 400 that are in the state house, more than 100 are New Hampshire Liberty Alliance endorsed. So that means a quarter are small L libertarian, small government. So out of those 400, only 13 voted for the secession constitutional amendment, which just basically said, hey, we'll let Granite Staters, we'll let people from New Hampshire vote on it. So it wasn't even really creating secession. It was creating the opportunity for people to decide if that is what they want, right? Kind of like the Brexit vote was. So we got 13 out of 400. There were 13 original colonies, so I think we can make some arguments, right? But then we listened to the feedback, and the feedback was, this seems too radical, this is too extreme, this is too out there. So 2 years later, when we could introduce bills again, we amended them. So the one was, if the federal government's federal national debt reaches $40 trillion, then that is the triggering event to pull the vote, to call the vote on secession. So if it reaches 40 trillion, which at the time seemed crazy because it was at 33 trillion when we put that in.
And we're getting close.
At 37. Yeah. So, you know, tick tock. And then we put in a second bill, which was a study committee, because of course people hear these ideas and they're like, what? How would that work? Would I get my pension? If I live in Maine, how do I get to Massachusetts? Are there going to be border controls? How would we do energy? If we want to invade poor Quebec, how would we have an army? You know, so people have a lot of questions. And so we wanted to do a study committee to start to address those questions. That sadly also got voted down, but I do think that is going to be the avenue to start to really have these conversations, because the reality is, I don't even know with Trump and Doge and stuff, you know, we may solve one problem and start creating a whole other problem, right? A real technocracy. And I think we need to be careful about that as well.
Go ahead. Okay, I want to touch back. I didn't know there was 400 people in the House of New Hampshire. So what do they have, like five constituents they represent each person?
I mean, they have 3,000 is the number, like it's 3,300. The standing joke is, you know, your rep, you see them in the grocery store, you have their cell phone on speed dial, they don't have offices, and they get paid $100 a year. So it is truly a citizen legislature, and it the size of it and the nature of it actually makes it less corruptible, because having to bribe, influence, persuade, lobby, whatever word you want to give it, you know, 400 people is a lot harder, because we know here we have a great Senate for the first time in the 16 years I've lived here. So maybe, you know, it won't be the case, but it was always like we could get good bills through the House, actually, because it's so big. And if you have, you know, honorable bills or something that is actually really solving a problem and not, you know, just a special interest, you can usually build consensus if it's genuinely fixing something or genuinely necessary. And so we have seen good things come out of the House and then get killed in the Senate. For example, we had a Defend the Guard bill. I don't know if you've heard of this one.
I think I've heard of it, but go into detail to explain it to the audience.
So basically, it's a bill that says you cannot deploy the National Guard overseas unless there's a congressional declaration of war. And that, to any American, sounds like, oh yeah, that's totally how it should work. But that's not how it works, because Congress has not done its job since the Korean War in the 50s. So they won't sack up in order to actually declare war, right? So we have all these interventions overseas, and now we're seeing there's an immense amount of funny money that's being funneled to a lot of like warlords. And, you know, it's just war is, you know, it's the flip side of the welfare state, but the warfare state also only benefits certain special interests, you know, the military industrial complex, the NGOs that are linked to it, and all of that. So I forget how we even got here.
That's okay. It's the way conversation goes. I wanted to ask you about Ross Ulbricht, because that's kind of the big libertarian victory that they've had recently. Why was that such a good thing? Because I still see people that don't really understand the case think, oh, Trump let out some murderer, some thug, some horrible person. And then what should libertarians champion now to replace the Ross Ulbricht movement? Because it's been going on for over a decade. You know, kudos to his mom for sticking with it and getting that accomplished. But what should they champion next, like their next
act? Right. So I'm actually very proud of the work I did on the Ross Ulbricht story. I was the first person to platform Lynn, his mother. We had her out at Liberty Forum and Porkfest, I believe, in the past 12 years that he's been in prison. She only missed one of our events. She, if you ever get arrested and you're going to prison, you want Lynn in your corner. That is what I know. Just amazing, right? So why Ross? Why did we get behind this issue? What was going on? So he actually was very much like Edward Snowden and Aaron Swartz. And Aaron, actually, just so people know, he was 26 years old. He is the founder of the RSS feed, and he started Reddit. He was a brilliant whiz kid, and he was the kid who went to MIT, and he wanted to download all the academic papers and then set it free to the world. So instead of these big paywalls that all of us can't afford, he was like, knowledge is supreme and I want to make it available. And I think that's extremely noble, right? So the federal government got really mad at him. It was mixed up in all the WikiLeaks stuff and like that whole 2010 to 2014 era, I suppose, maybe the advent of where people started to realize, oh, technology or information created by technology in dissidents or people critical of the government's hands is going to be a massive weapon against malfeasance in the government. And I mean, we're seeing that panic play out right now. And so Aaron, they overcharged him with the lawfare stuff in the same way they overcharged Ross Ulbricht, in the same way they're overcharging Roger Ver and overcharged Ian Freeman. And I'll explain all of those in a sec. So Aaron ended up committing as a 26-year-old because of that lawfare. So when they went after Ross Ulbricht, they did what they often do in sort of PR battles, right? There's sort of what the law says. And then there's like what people are saying in the papers. And the government has a massive PR cudgel. And they also, it turns out, were giving literally billions of dollars to newspapers and propaganda arms, you know, from NPR to the New York Times to Politico to all these organizations to have them feed stories to the Americans. So the story they fed about Ross was murder for hire. So that was the first thing anyone ever heard about him was dark web, Silk Road, drugs, murder for hire. Now, if you just hear those four things, you're probably going to be like, man, this guy sounds like a scuzz bucket. But he wasn't. So he was intellectually, philosophically driven. He was not allowed to bring his libertarian philosophy up as a defense at all. So they actually control speech in cases now, which, you know, I'm a lawyer, so we put a pin in that one too. But I mean, it's a real problem. We now have a injustice system that actually says, we're going to tell you what you can raise as a defense. And I'm like, that's absurd. Like, I should be free to raise whatever defense I want to raise. Done, right? So they told him he wasn't allowed to talk about why he built Silk Road. But the reason he built it was to try and reduce the harm of the drug war. Now, here's the reality. You know, I don't even drink alcohol, and I still think prohibition was bad. Right? Because the more you push something underground, the more the bad guys are involved in it. And then shockingly, if you actually pull it all back, what you realize is the cartels, the bad drug cartels, and the government are actually colluding through prohibition to make it more dangerous, to make it higher risk, and to make it dark. And so it would be better to say everything should be legal, but you should understand, don't do fentanyl. You know, like we should be educating people on the right parts of the problem, telling people this doesn't exist when millions of people are drug addicts is nonsensical. You're not identifying and solving the right problem. So Ross actually wanted to solve that problem by making it safer. So the drugs were rated. You could like Yelp your drug dealer. So you could be like, this guy is, don't buy from him. It's, you know, oregano. He had policies to say anything to do with pornography, anything to do with children, not allowed, right? So he did have safeguards for, fair enough, a sort of new territory, right? So because I understood everything from the landscape and my background as a Silicon Valley lawyer, so like, you know, he got arrested, he was a Silicon Valley tech kid, so all of that appealed to me as well. So I just kind of knew he was being sandbagged from the start. And then you watch these cases against these crypto pioneers, and that's the last piece of this puzzle. The federal government has stolen 97% of the value of the dollar since the Federal Reserve was implemented in 1913. So when everyone says, man, I think I'm getting poorer, or why is it hard to let, you know, make ends meet? Why do we have to work so hard? I mean, I'm still waiting for the person to explain to me the following. When we got the internet and email, how did I personally go from a 5-day work week to a 7-day work week? Weren't we supposed to go from a 5-day to like a 3-day? Like we became more productive and then we just took on more. That was not a good trade.
I don't think so, no. Very American thing to do there, work too much.
Right, yeah. And I mean, now that I'm getting older, I'm actually like relearning, setting those boundaries and not actually doing that. But, you know, so Bitcoin or sound money or crypto is the other part of this. So there are a lot of people who have, including Ron Paul and other leaders, Republicans. I haven't really heard anyone from the Democratic side want to talk about monetary policy yet, but maybe we will. see that. Actually, maybe RFK and Tulsi are sort of educated on that at this stage. So, so the crypto aspect was there's new money that does not have the flaws that the current system has, which is a nice way of saying it wasn't in the hands of the bad guys. And they knew it. And they were like, we have to destroy this before it takes off. And the reason they gave Ross Ulbricht two life sentences without the chance of parole to a 26-year-old who spent 12 years in Supermax because of that, for technically all he did was build a website. No one died. No one got, you know, like he built a website to solve problems against the federal government. And for that, you know, they wanted him to die in prison. So I think what Donald Trump did is clever. I think what the LP did, the Libertarian Party did, was clever. What they, I mean, you know, a lot of us had been working on this for a really long time, but they actually invited both RFK and Trump to the Libertarian Convention. Now, I had invited RFK to come to Porkfest, which is one of the Free State Project's annual events. It's a camping extravaganza, third week of June, up in the North Country. Really fun, very family friendly. People camp, the kids do free ranging, lectures, talks, some mucky mucks, but you know, mostly really just that building of the community thing. And so RFK came out for that, which is where I think this MAHA MAGA thing kind of was born. So it comes out of the Free State Libertarians. So anyway, what Angela McArdle did is she actually, you know, she made it quid pro quo. Hey, if more libertarians vote for you than have in the past, will you promise to release Ross Ulbricht on day one? And it was day two, but we'll take it. And I think it was smart. First of all, didn't really cost him that much. You know, the people who I think I would say out of 100 comments, I'll see one where someone is like, how dare you? This guy was dangerous, whatever. So I think for the most part, people either A, don't care, don't even know who he is, you know, and or B, they kind of get it. And I went and looked at the numbers, actually, and there was a 3% swing from libertarian voters to the Trump election. You know, I think we can show those numbers. I certainly know personally, you know, people I talked to here, and like there, people did change their votes. And so we're really grateful for that. But now we got two new ones we got to get out.
It never ends, does it? The government's always grabbing people.
Frustrating, but it's also the crypto through line. So two free staters here in New Hampshire have run afoul of the sort of SEC and the criminal justice and the lawfare and all of that. One was a company called Library, LBRY, and they basically built a platform called Odyssey. And it's a censor-proof platform. So how we saw through COVID mania, them taking down YouTube, deplatforming, taking people's bank accounts. This is a site that you can't take it down. It's actually, when you put the content up, it's registered on the blockchain, if I'm explaining it right. So the SEC went after that guy and, you know, said that his issuance of tokens ran afoul of the SEC. But here's the thing. He spent more than $1 million on his lawyers. And he was like, hey, like, tell me how to comply. And then the lawyers would go to the SEC and they'd be like, hey, what does he need to do? And they'd be like, we don't know. Do it. And then we'll see what you know, what we think. And so they did that to Library. They did that to Roger Ver, who was he's known as Bitcoin Jesus, but he was actually one of the first Bitcoin pioneers. I learned about Bitcoin because Roger came to Porkfest back in whenever, like 2011, 12, 13. I mean, I bought my first Bitcoin for $6. I spent it. I'm not one of those people. I'm the idiot who just, you know, had fun.
You could be rolling in luxury right now if you held on to that.
I wish. But like he gave up his American citizenship, Roger did, because there were all these persecutions happening with other Bitcoin pioneers. And he used, again, very fancy lawyers. His emails that actually came out in Discovery all say, make sure we're doing everything literally by the book, by the letter, because I don't want any crap down the line, right? Yeah. the Department of Justice raided, like with a SWAT team, his tax lawyer's offices. I mean, have you ever heard of such a thing? This is like beyond Banana Republic level stuff. I mean, I don't think you could even pull that off in the Ukraine, you know?
I thought there'd be attorney-client privilege. Like they wouldn't be able to look at it. I mean, exactly. Like as law school 101, I would think they would know.
Right? Yeah, no, it was really shocking. And so what they've done with Roger is they're charging him with 109 years. He's currently in Spain facing extradition. I believe the extradition was actually heard and that they are going to extradite him, which is a bad sign. So there's Roger. And that one to me just seems like that is the federal government going back for a second bite at the apple, because the value. So he had to pay a certain amount of taxes to give up his U.S. citizenship, which again, he only gave up because of the persecution against crypto people, right? He's not like un-American or anything like that. And the same with me. People ask, you know, they're like, oh, secession. That's like so. And I'm like, America was born from secession. Like it's our history, literally. And like, it's un-American to stay in a bad deal. And we're all getting a bad deal from the feds. So there is a petition for Roger. It's called freerogernow.org. And so folks listening can please go sign up there. If I'm remembering correctly that the extradition was actually approved, I do think that creates bad international law. It kind of makes, you know, it's not a good precedent, because of course that's what they tried to do to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks as well, right? Like that was that whole battle, is can we extradite him to persecute him here with lawfare? And then the final crypto guy is Ian Freeman. And so he's a free stater here who is actually currently in jail. He got an 8-year sentence for being basically the Bitcoin ATM in the middle between a romance scam and scammers. So old ladies who'd never met people who were like, give me all your money. And I mean, some of these ladies lost like $1 million. And I'm like, it's sad, but I'm also like, that is not the ATM's fault. And so they charged him with conspiracy to money launder, but never named the people he was conspiring with. And that was like the most serious charge. Of course, they also decimated him in the media, lots of name calling, scammer, fraudster, all those kinds of words, never charged, never found guilty of any of those things. And so with Ian, and people can go to freeiannow.org for that one, with Ian, he just basically was, the way to I think about it is, I'm pretty sure every ATM in America has been used for a crime. And so if we agree that that is true, then my question is, why is Ian Freeman in prison, but every single other bank CEO is not, right? So we know this is selective persecution. We know it is happening not with FRNs or dollars or, you know, diluted paper money, but it is happening to people who are championing digital currencies. And we're doing that as an alternative, again, to try and solve the problems created by what is ostensibly clipping coins. They are making us poorer, and no one understands that inflation is an invisible tax.
That's for sure. What do you think the future is for Bitcoin? Because, you know, government always kind of hated it, and now the Trump administration is getting a little cozy to it. And me, I think I don't want the government near Bitcoin because the government ruins everything. And then I hear some people saying, oh, it's just a bridge to CBDCs, or the government's going to use it and do some sort of pump and dump to benefit their wealthy friends. Where is Bitcoin going? Is it going to stay this treasured little piece of digital currency that libertarians love, or is it going to get corrupted?
I mean, that is the $27 billion question, right? $27 million, I guess. Make the joke right. I don't know, but everything you just said is sort of what I'm concerned about as well. I have diversified my holdings. I'm actually pretty bullish on Zeno, which is a more privacy-centered coin. So there are new crypto products being developed that do address some of the problems with a Bitcoin, which included it's not as anonymous as people originally thought, right? So I think the next wave is going to be in privacy coins. That being said, I'm equally concerned, right? Like, I definitely think we're on the path to some kind of UBI, universal basic income. I see your face. I agree. I'll tell you, honestly, my most credible reason that I'm saying that, although I've been talking about it for years, is I happened to be flipping through my Netflix last night. And, you know, like sometimes you keep going and you're like, oh, what's new or whatever, right? And there's this show and it's on Fox. And I think it's literally called like Universal Basic Dudes or Universal Basic something. And it's a cartoon and it's like three kind of like blue collar dudes who like are living off universal basic income. And I saw that and I was like, oh, that is a bad sign, because that's like saying it's a fait accompli, right? So, but we also have to grapple with the reality of AI and all these things that are happening. I mean, you know, I'm a lawyer by training, but I actually did my MFA in creative writing. And I, you know, I'm a lawyer, but I'm an artist. I'm confused. I'm left brain, right brain. See, left brain, right brain, and then no brain. So, funnily, I actually did. I have this series I do on my website, carlagarrick.com, that I just play with the AI sometimes in the morning. Like, I either grok or I chat GPT, or sometimes I like put them against each other to kind of see who's lying in what way or how they're being programmed or some of that. And actually this morning I asked it something like, sketch what a dystopian technocracy. I didn't even say dystopian. I think I just said sketch a technocracy that could be created between now and 2030. And it had all the things you just said, right? So I think the problem is going to be they're going to do UBI tied to a digital currency. Whether that's going to be Bitcoin, which I do think has been hijacked. And in fact, the reason they're going after Roger Ver is because he wrote a book called Hijacking Bitcoin, where they're saying actually it was kind of taken over by people who don't have the same interests, right? So they've kind of turned it into a digital asset. It's a little bit like holding gold. That's fine. I mean, it could be wealth creation and whatever, but that's not what it was started for. It was started to solve money problems and make it peer-to-peer ways we could all pay each other without having to do the middleman. And so I think we're going to have UBI. I think it's going to be tied to some kind of digital currency. I don't know if it's going to be Bitcoin or Dogecoin or Trump's coin. But, and this is a possibly unpopular opinion that is maybe not well thought out yet, but I'll just throw it out here, is, you know, I see Bernie and Warren and all the people reading about, you know, the reforms and you know, follow the money. That is what we as investigative reporters used to do, right? Like, we'd be like, this is how you know who's corrupt, right? And I think we're facing a financial collapse. I think we have gotten to a stage where the AI is actually going to replace a lot of things. And so we do have to grapple with what are the solutions for that. I'm hopeful it's not universal enslavement. I think that if we do something like UBI, we're going to have to be very thoughtful about it. And this will be unpopular as well, but maybe it needs to be tied to, like, if you take UBI, you lose the right to vote. And then, right? Because, like, if you want to be a slave, I know this sounds really harsh, but it's like, I think people have to fully grasp things. And I mean that literally, like, understand things, right? So sometimes you have to shock them. I think through COVID mania, we saw this obedience to the experts, right? And, oh, government is this, like, know-all being that just omnipotently is giving you good advice about everything, right? Like, a lot of people have replaced religion and God and spiritualism with the government, and those things are not the same. I believe the government can only be immoral because it's literally going, we know what the greater good is. And I'm like, well, it's not good for me. They're like, shut up. What?
I know people act like, oh, they want freedom and liberty, but really most people can't handle true freedom or liberty. When it comes down to it and times get tough, they want to, like, suckle at the power teat of the government and say, give me my money. I mean, Andrew Yang talked about UBI in 2020 and people kind of laughed at him. And then what do you know? Like, a year later, we're cutting checks to people to stay home for no reason.
Right. Yeah. And I think that was sort of, I mean, I think a lot of through COVID mania, there was a lot of testing of what people will take. I think there were a lot of numbers that were interesting that came out of it. I mean, one that stands out in my mind is, I think it's fair to say about 30% of Americans are not obedient. But back to that idea of losing the right to vote, it's really to push in the same way maybe that a lot of my secession work is. I like to push conversations so that people can really start to come up with the right, you have to identify the right problems in order to come up with the right solutions. And we are going to have this tipping point with AI and all of these things. And so if we want to build a healthy society, people have to be cognizant. They actually have to control their own minds as opposed to being mind controlled. And the fastest life hack I could think of is if you force people to sign a contract that says, I am now the property of the US government for receiving this money, and I lose the right to vote for until I stop taking it plus 6 months or whatever, so you can't game the system. And what I hope is somewhere in that process, we're actually communicating self-ownership, personal responsibility, bringing people back to critical thinking, bringing them back to understanding their role as an individual in life. I mean, every human, you are here to make your life as amazing as you can humanly do. It is really only about you. If you're not healthy, make sure you get healthy. Then you start to help other people. But, like, I think people's minds have been co-opted, and we have to go back to some true sense of, I own me. What am I doing? I got maybe like 80 years on this earth, maybe 120 if we get lucky, right, with new science and stuff. How can I make a difference? And at a minimum for me, I decided that's here in the free state of New Hampshire, where it's boring but delightful.
I need to give New Hampshire another try, maybe.
I mean, I'd love to come out for one of our events. We have Liberty Forum is in April 24th through the 27th. That'll be at the Grapponi Center in Concord, so in our capital, state capital. Jeff Dice from the Mises Institute, I believe, is one of the keynote speakers. In the past, we've had everyone from Edward Snowden. Tulsi Gabbard was our keynote last year. We've had, you know, just like Rand Paul, like all the, you know, all the people you might want to see. But it is also a great opportunity to just come meet the community and sort of see what we're working on, how people can help and contribute, and why life, you know, why you should move here and come like do this, right? And then Porkfest, which I mentioned earlier, that's third week in June. And then we have a little crypto conference that one of our board members, Carol Ann Fenton, puts on in the fall. That's like, I mean, it's the best time to come here. It's amazing. It's like the trees turn to candy, you know what I mean? But honestly, people can just go to freestateproject.org or fsp.org/calendar. There's always something going on. There are regional meetups in different parts of the state. There are community centers in different parts of the state. There are thousands upon thousands of us here. So you can actually start to, you know, I've been here long enough and doing it long enough where I was like, I used to hang out with all the, you know, two-way long-bearded gun dudes. And I'm like, well, I don't really have to do that anymore because, I mean, I will. There's nothing wrong with it, right? But, you know, there's so many of us that we can each find our own sort of flavor to what you like, right? So I'm a foodie. I like the artsy stuff. I do like testifying on some bills. And so people come visit. And then you kind of start to find your people. And then it becomes more and more appealing. And I'll leave you with this. I am also a real estate agent. So that's left brain, right brain, no brain, some brain. And I work for Porcupine Real Estate. And, you know, I happily love selling homes to people in New Hampshire. Some people actually will never move, but they do want to invest in what we're doing here in the Free State. And so, We just passed a bill that actually made DAOs legal. So those are distributed autonomous organizations. So basically like a digital LLC. And so we can start to tokenize real estate. So that is something I think that'll be interesting over time. But genuinely, I would say anyone where they're like, huh, what would life be like if we did build our own country? Come, let's figure it out. Like, I think we can do better. And it starts with having the right network and the right kind of people who are thought leaders who want to make a difference. So I'd love to invite you, Courtney, come visit us sometime.
I wanted to get your take on what's going on with the Libertarian Party, because there seems to be like a little bit of drama going on. I know the chair stepped down and then they quickly replaced her with two new people that, I mean, I had never really heard of them. I think people were expecting, I think it's Michael Heiss, if I have the name right, maybe would take over. It's from the Mises Caucus. I know membership went down in fundraising in the Libertarian Party last year. So what's going on? Is the Libertarian Party dead in the water? Is the Mises Caucus dead? They kind of had their little hostile takeover and everybody thought it was going to be great. And it feels like it just kind of flatlined and went right into MAGA land. Loaded question, I know.
Well, you know, and what would the Libertarian Party be without the drama and the infighting? It almost feels like it's part of its job. In fact, I think I put a poll up this morning on X where I made like a little poll that said, will libertarians always complain about everything? And then the two options were yes and yes. So it comes with the territory. I mean, I personally actually really liked Angela, and I think she did some cool stuff, but it does look like there are some questions about the way some of the finances were run. I'm not going to say I'm going to give her a pass, but I think getting Ross out is going to sort of smooth over a lot of stuff. I do think the Mises Caucus has lost some of its spice and flavor and the appetite for that. I've been involved with all of this for such a long time that, you know, I remember the when people are calling Ron Paul a racist and whatever, right? So these conversations always bubble up. They're ways people sling mud, whatever, right? But it has gotten, I mean, I don't know, for me personally, and I like it pretty salty and spicy personally. So when I'm starting to say, oof, you know, then you know it's probably way, way over the line. The future of the LP, I think it'll always be around. I did see and don't really know that much about the two guys who are coming in. It did sound like the top guy, whose name I'm actually blanking on, was Nicalia. Yeah. He's from the liberal caucus, the more classical liberal caucus. So I think there is this sort of like classical liberal versus the Mises guys. And of course, there's room for all of that, but libertarians wouldn't be libertarians if they didn't spend all their time infighting instead of fighting the man, you know. I'm not a big fan of this left-right libertarian narrative either. I feel like that was co-opted out of just straight-up politics, and it's basically, you know, Confucius or whoever said, divide and conquer, Sun Tzu. Art of war, like if it's, you know, so I always say we're not left or right, we're libertarian, and we actually pull issues from both sides of that spectrum. And we can, of course, do a much better job with messaging. So it'll be interesting to see. I did actually read this morning that there was a radical caucus and the LP that is now defunct, and they were the hardcore ANCAPs. And I was like, huh, is it time for me to bring the radical caucus back? You know, I was like, forget about the classical liberals and the Mises. I can make this mix worse.
Yeah, the parties. I grew up going to Southern Baptist churches, and like kind of the joke about them is they'll argue over the color of the carpet. And when you get around libertarians, it's that same vibe, just drama for drama's sake. And I was at the convention and it was a mess. I mean, Trump came in. I thought people were going to start throwing punches, to be perfectly honest. It was wild inside that room. If the Secret Service wasn't there, I think people would have started throwing people to the ground. Like, wow. I might have left. I didn't enjoy it. I was like, I don't think I'm coming back to this for a while. Anyway, I don't want to.
And also sort of back to that, you know, what are we doing as humans thing? It's like, decorum and good manners and those things actually serve a societal purpose. And I get very frustrated with like the, you know, the, like the mean dude vibe, right? Like the look, I've been doing this long enough. I'm like, enough MFOs have pulled my ponytails. You know what I mean? Like it's that drama of, oh, well, just pull your ponytail, you know? And I'm like, you're going to stop pulling my ponytail now, if you don't mind. Right. So we need to be able to tell these people, it has to go back to you have some manners, because here is the reality. If you don't want authoritarianism and you want more freedom, then you need to learn how to behave like a not. Okay. And these, like that energy where you're like, oh, it felt like punches are going to be thrown and like all these things. I'm like, that's kinetic energy that people have to control in their own corpus. You should not be behaving that way. We should be doing better. And when these people do not reflect the actual things they're advocating for, so if you're going to tell me, oh, we should have more freedom and more personal responsibility, I want to see the more personal responsibility before I want to see the more freedom, because you're not persuading me that this is the right path. We have to lead by example and we have to be better than everyone else.
Yeah, I think it's funny because the Libertarian Party is so dominated by men. And every time I'm around libertarians or I've been to a couple of their conventions, I'm like, oh, this is pretty obvious why you're only men, because no woman in her right mind would want to be here.
Right. And you know, and I think we need to, I'm actually doing a talk at Liberty Forum on that. You know, I was surprised they actually picked me, but I said, you know, defaulting to IQ over EQ is hurting the libertarian movement, because you know, you can't actually grow if you're not procreating, not to quote Musk, right? But I'm like, yes, if no one wants to interact with you because your skill set needs some work, then let's focus on those things. And calling women low IQ, probably not the way to go.
I wouldn't think so. Yeah. Good. We agree on that.
Well, it's funny though, too. I will say on the flip side, I've had so many insulting conversations with actually mostly the specific one I'm thinking of was a white man from New York Times, which isn't relevant except that he made it relevant, where, you know, he actually was sort of accusing me, and this was back in 2016, it was a trigger the move thing, because he was the same guy who said, trigger the move means you're a violent movement. And I was like, huh? And he's like, the word trigger is triggering and blah. And I was like, dude, okay. Give me another word that means this thing needs to happen before this thing happens, i.e. 20,000 people have to sign the contract so that we can trigger the move so that people start to come. And he sat there for a long time and he was like, oh, okay, you got me. But same guy was literally like, the libertarian movement is just made up of white men. And I was like, dude, I'm an African American. I'm from South Africa originally, right? So I'm a South African American woman with two postgraduate degrees who's running a movement of 20,000 libertarians. I think it's rude to be like, it's just filled with white men. Do I not exist? Do you not see me? Like, hello, right? So we also have to call that part out. It's like, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't.
Libertarian Party is a punching bag, aren't they? They just take all the crap from the media all the time.
Yeah. And honestly, if that was its role, I mean, based on the strategy that we've successfully done in New Hampshire, which is we are a large and growing caucus within the Republican Party here. So to the extent we want activists to win, they run as Republican candidates. I've run three times, and, you know, and I'm an open secessionist, and I've gone from like 36% to 46%. And then they were like, we're going to literally gerrymander her district so that this girl can never, you know, woman can never, you know, and now I'm like, okay, well, then I'll just wait. And then I will run one time for president of a free and independent New Hampshire. And then I'm retiring.
Did want to ask you about a few things Trump's doing, because I always like the libertarian take. It's always a different perspective. Since you did immigrate here from South Africa, so you're familiar with the immigration process, what is your take on what Trump's doing with the ICE raids? Too far? Not enough? You have a firsthand experience. Like, I have an opinion on it. I think deport everybody that's here illegally, but I've had the comfort of always being, you know, born here. I never had to go through the process.
Right. So, you know, I as an immigrant, like, I have a lot of empathy for immigrants, but of course I did come here legally. I won a green card in the lottery. I had to fly back and forth for many years. You know, it's a process. So it makes sense to me that if you have, you know, what do we call it? A nation of laws. I'm like, that's a little convenient. But then if it is, then, you know, we got to stick to it. I'm not a huge fan of, you know, raids, using violence, bringing out the military. Now we're flying people back to Guantanamo. Like, all of these things sound like not great, but I think we need to give it a little bit of time and see what really does happen. I hate the anti-immigrant rhetoric. I mean, it's just, it is pretty nasty out there. And it's unfortunate because, of course, I mean, actually, statistically, immigrants do commit less crime than actual Americans. I mean, let's just, you know, stick to the facts here. And this country is built on the backs of immigrants. Like, we all came from somewhere, you know, even like fourth generation Irish. I'm like, the Abenaki were here in New Hampshire before you were, you know. So I'm going to say I'm I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be good or bad. I think that there are pros and cons to both of them, but I think it is a larger extension of how much authoritarianism or looking away we're going to tolerate, because I do think using the military to drone strike cartels in Mexico sounds a lot like we're creating some problems right on our border that, you know, we might not, you know, like that would be like we're in a soft off the books war with Mexico.
Yeah, I don't like it. It sounds like the war on drugs and steroids. I'm kind of shocked he designated them terrorist organization and nobody really said, wait, I can only imagine what a war with the cartel would be like. They'll start sending people back in pieces.
I mean, I think it'll get a lot bad before it gets better, I suppose. But I think time is going to tell. I will say this. I think we're in for the most interesting 4 years of politics that we have ever seen. I think the idea of X being available to actually allow, you know, I was heavily, heavily censored. And I think I'm still censored on X, but let's give it the benefit of the doubt. You know, we're on the cusp of all these things, of a possible financial collapse. We have a population collapse to some extent. There's all this COVID mania stuff that has not been sorted out. I'm not even sure what's happening with people's health. No one's talking about the fact that they boosted all the real supporter, like the military, the airlines, you know, like you hear someone, there's an airline crash and now it's a chick was driving the airplane fault, instead of possibly being like, could this be like 9 other things, please? Or are you literally using the manufactured propaganda that's being pushed into your little pencil brain where you think you're being edgy and smart? And I'm like, no, it's not the reason. Let's look at some other things, right? So financial collapse, change of the money, all this health issues, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what RFK does. It's going to be, I don't know what's going on with Musk and now these judges who are saying we're going to block things ex parte. It's the Chinese curse that we are living in interesting times.
I don't have too much faith that Kennedy's going to do anything, because I feel like he softened his language a little bit. And let's not forget, Kennedy was at the Libertarian Convention and they had these shirts passing out that said, give Trump another shot, Trump Fauci. And they had rubber chickens and they were calling Trump, like, now you've kind of capitulated and now you're all about Trump. So are you really going to do anything at Health and Human Services, or do you just want your power position in the government?
Yeah, it's interesting because I actually got tapped with the MAHA folks to possibly work in their propaganda arm. I mean, it's the short version, right? Like the Department of Public Affairs. And I was definitely like, I wasn't like a senior pick, but you know, there were conversations. And then based on the person Bobby brought in, who was from EcoHealth as his like chief of staff for a hot second there, I was like, oh, I don't know. And then they, you know, part of the responsibilities of this office, because people forget under HHS are like 13 other departments, right? Because like, when we say everything's too big and the waste and the whatever, it's like, it's so hard to unravel. But now we have actually unraveled it with, I think this is where AI is helping. So I actually think what's happened is, so we got the AI later than a lot of smart people have been working with it, right? And I think it actually ran models. Like it probably ran, are these crazy sovereign citizens onto something through it? And the machine was like, yep, they figured it out. If you do these things, that is, they're right, right? And then like, I think they've run all these scenarios through it and the AI was kind of like, oh yeah, we totally, there is no more rule of law because this contradicts this. And so I think there's also like the deep state is in a deep state of panic, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
I hope so.
Fingers crossed.
I don't know, sometimes I look over at Musk and I'm like, maybe you are the deep state and you're just getting it too cozy.
So I think, you know, we can't really predict what's going to happen, but I think it's going to be interesting. And sadly, you know, back to the mindset thing, and then I do have to jump off. But the way people are manipulated is either through fear, right? So we see that with the kind of music, like the headlines, the death counters, all of that. You have to, that's why you have to get healthy, is so that you can like start to guard against those things. You know, I mean, RFK is not libertarian. So, you know.
But he's a lifetime member. So that means he's a libertarian, right? Isn't that what they say? he counts as one of those.
I don't know how those work. Is it like if you get an honorary doctorate from somewhere?
I think you just pay the fee. I think that's all it is. All about the money.
But yeah, I think that people need to be less distracted. Back to the mindset thing, right? Is we live in this constant cycle where it's almost like even those of us who are constantly like paying attention to things, like I feel like there's so much I know now. Like I've read so many, you know, it's like it's hard to keep those pictures clear. And what the AI can do again as a tool is to kind of connect those dots. And so I think we're in a mass transitionary period, but people can guard against whatever is happening to themselves by freeing up your own attention span, maybe putting down the devices, putting down the vitriol, and going, hey, how am I living my life? What makes me happy? Can I be doing more of that? Can we be spreading more positivity and love? I think, you know, we people's egos are dysregulated. I think that's sort of part of social media. We know a lot of that's manufactured. And so it becomes really our duty, I think, as I would say, like I'm a small owl libertarian, but, you know, I'm just like, hey, I'm someone who's for self-ownership. So I think it starts with each of us and how we navigate in the world. So don't be a
I like that. I couldn't agree more. Do you want to tell people where they can find you if they want to hear more of this fresh take you got?
Yeah, people can follow me. I'm on social media under my name. So it's Carla Gerick, GERICKE. And the Free State Project is FSP.org. That is a fine place to go to find out about Porkfest and the New Hampshire Liberty Forum coming up. Workwise, Porcupine Real Estate. And yeah, throw me a follow. I'm doing this crazy experiment on X. 365 X lives, my living experiment. So I'm going on there every day. So if people like this, there's more out there.
Now that you know where we've been, find out where we're going. Tune in to Ladies Love Politics, where you can stay informed without going insane.